Before we get going, I heard there was a request for a North Dakota story earlier in the day, and I can't help but give a North Dakota story. And I realize, I don't mean any offense, Dr. Cora, Certified Angus Beef has one of the most successful marketing campaigns of any animal ag product ever. And I don't know if you spend a little bit too much time in North Dakota, your influence is rubbing off, but there's a new marketing campaign that started. I want you to take a look at this and consider this for your future. Okay, so this is at the Cheyenne Bar in Cheyenne, North Dakota. We see the highlight up there. You guys can read that. I don't need to repeat it. So do you think it'll work? All right, well, we're going to give it a try anyway. So now moving on to something that we're actually talking about today in a presentation. Bull breeding. This is a little bit different than where a lot of the conference is focused. And one of the things that everybody in the room knows all too well is what's represented on these slides. So when we look at the actual adoption, utilization, is this cutting out? Okay, I guess I'm going to be an anchor. All right, so when we look at the actual adoption and utilization of reproductive technologies, this is kind of what we see. And we can pick on the numbers a little bit. You know, is it 8% or is it 13% of the cows that are out there actually bred with AI? But concentrate on the left side of the graph. This is the percentage of cattle that are actively bred with bulls. So a lot of them, a great majority of them. So with this in mind, there was some interest in just using bull breeding with estrus synchronization. So this could be an opportunity, possibly a gateway for people who are just starting this effort to get into synchronization, a little bit different than actual AI, but still to go through some of the motions. If it works, if it's successful with the first group, natural service breeding, then make that next step into AI. So with that in mind, I'm going to review several items that we need to be concerned with if we're going to try this on our operations. And we kind of broke them out, three very simple categories. I've got factors that come from the bull, factors that come from the cow, and then how do we put all this stuff together to actually implement a synchronization protocol on our operation? So starting with our bull factors, and we'll go through these ones here, probably going to take the most time. I do ask wherever Brian went that I get yelled at if I go over because we are running behind today. So very quickly, the first three, age, breeding soundness, and libido. We're going to use all of these things kind of in combination to come up with probably the most often asked question that we get when it comes to synchronization with bulls is what kind of stocking rates can I use out there? So when we look at age from the beginning, and I'll set these slides up a little bit, across the top here we've got yearling bulls, two-year-old bulls, and bulls that are 3 years and older. And then we've got different behavioral concepts, okay? So number of mounts, number of services, and I'll back up one step and say to have a successful service, we need three things. So first is an erection, then we have an intermission, and then we have an ejaculation. That's what a service is. If you're really interested in all these things, we can go into the papers that are listed here and see how those individual components break out. But the first thing that we'll talk about is just the number of mounts that bulls of different ages use. And again, these are all synchronized cattle, and this is during a peak of estrus activity. So between 30 and 48 hours, depending on if this was a Synchromate B protocol or if this was just a one-shot prostaglandin protocol. So if we look at the mounts, and this is no surprise, if anybody's ever turned out a yearling bull, it doesn't say whether he's mounting the front end or the back end. It just says he's mounting, okay? So that's the mounting activity, significantly higher mounting activity in those yearling bulls. But the next line down is services, okay? So there's not a lot of difference among these treatments in the number of times that they actually service cows. Then when we come down here, so what is the actual pregnant rate? And this says pregnant of percent serviced. So they serviced a cow, pregnancy rate of those services of estrus cows. And we see those yearling bulls have significantly lower fertility. Again, when you're using estrus synchronization with your cow herds. So this is something we really, really need to keep in mind, and it helps shape the recommendations for who we should put in a synchronization program in terms of bulls. Breeding soundness exams, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but something that needs to be done every year. We know things happen. We know spermatogenesis takes about 60 days, so if we're great, we've got a nice January day, went to a bull sale, bull was semen tested, he came back in your house and stood in the open prairie with his legs spread apart, may have had some influence on his reproductive capability by the time you actually breed with him in January, or sorry, May. So breeding soundness exams are an indicator of fertility. And in a big study that looked at many, many different cattle, multiple or single breeding pastures, when bulls were classified as satisfactory, so they basically passed, 45% pregnancy rate. When they were questionable, I think the new status is deferred, okay, 10 percentage difference. So not rocket science. Go out, give breeding soundness exams to those bulls. However, they do not evaluate libido. So that's the thing that we really need to keep in mind. Breeding soundness exams are not libido tests. So in order to do this, we'll talk a little bit about one way that has happened. These are called service capacity tests. Anybody in the room familiar with service capacity tests? Okay, we've got a couple people here. All right, very good. So just in general, you take a service capacity test. Two non-estrous females, and these females are sedated. Okay, they can be put in blocks, they can be haltered, something like that. And then bulls are introduced into these pens for about 10 minutes. And then you just wait and see what happens. Okay, a range of services during this time from zero, some of the higher numbers we've seen are about 5. So that's in a 10 minutes time frame, right? But the thing is about libido tests is that they do not have much to say about fertility. So about the same, whether they were a high libido bull or a medium libido bull, it didn't make a difference. They're not an indicator of fertility. One of the things that I will mention here, for anybody who is in the South using eared cattle, the libido is really determined to some extent by breed type. When I say breed type, I'm talking about Bos Indicus cattle compared with Bos Taurus cattle. The Bos Indicus cattle have a lower libido compared with the Bos Taurus cattle. So just something to point out. So the question is, you got these cattle out there, and they are breeding up a storm, a synchronized estrous period. Did they, in effect, run out of semen? Right? Common question. We get this one once in a while. So do bulls run out? Because if we look at that, all the data that's out there, in about a 30-hour synchronized period, these active Bos Taurus cattle will breed an average of 60 times during that period. You get a really active bull, he may be breeding 100 and some odd times during this 30-hour synchronized period. So do they run dry? And we do a little bit of math, and there's people in the room right now that know this a lot better than I do in terms of sperm production. This is a reference that was out there that said about 5 million sperm per minute. Again, this is a mature bull from this particular data set, also probably a Holstein bull. So I'd like to talk to somebody who knew this about, our beef cattle, our beef bulls. But 5 million sperm a minute, commercial AI semen, about 20 million sperm in a dose. So if we look this over, it's about 4 minutes per dose is how long it takes to produce a straw of semen. And so overall, the thought is that in mature bulls, the semen is not a limiting factor. So if the semen isn't a limiting factor, then what is? This is another common question. You talk about bulls falling in love. So they go out there and they stick with one animal and they're going to be with her come rain or shine, no matter what everybody else is doing in that pen. Okay? And again, a summary of a pretty big data set, that doesn't happen very often. But we cannot look away from the fact that it does happen. And here's some indicators of why that might be happening. So the first one, if nobody's in heat, he's going to be with the cow that's in heat today, right? So a few females in estrus. The other place that it happens, and again, this is going back to some of the age considerations that we talked about. If there is an inexperienced bull, just after you turn them out. It's way more likely to happen in those situations. The third one, he get tired. He's just fatigued, right? Fatigue towards the end of the breeding season, that's another point in time when this phenomenon happens. And then also, quite frankly, a permissive female being out in the pasture. Okay? So if she's out there and willing, he may stick with her. And I'm going to show you now an example of somebody who's not being a permissive female. Okay, so this was out in a pasture, and this one just decided she'd had enough of that bull. She's laying down while he's trying to do his business. All right, so another thing that's very, very present is variability. Variability and preference. So if I were to ask a question, this animal, this female, was bred. During her estrus, how many times do you think she got bred? Okay, so if you think about that a little bit, obviously the low end is zero. Say she's pregnant, right? So that's at least one service. We go to the very top end of that, 27 times. If we look at average of different reports that are out there, the average female gets bred 4 times while she's in estrus. Okay, so this is what's going on while our bulls are out there with natural service. So here's another question. What percent of those cows or heifers that are in estrus actually get serviced? That bull is actively breeding out there. That's about 60 to 80%. And there's probably about 15 reports that are summarized here that kind of contribute to this number. Okay, so 60 to 80% of those cows that are in estrus get serviced. In summary, the number of services is much greater than the number of females that are present, but there's 20 to 40% of the females that they can be standing right next to that bull in estrus, and that bull does not breed them. So why is it that that bull just bypasses them? Okay? And we don't necessarily know why that is, but use your imagination. You might be able to come up with something. Let's just say that later in the breeding season, fewer cows are there in estrus, the bulls become less selective and those females do get pregnant. So again, a little bit of variability in some preference things about bulls that we don't necessarily know what's going on. So these feed into the stocking rate question. And this study looked at several different stocking rates from, basically they took 100 heifers and had them in pastures. Pen groups at the time, then moved out to pastures. So 100 heifers, and then they either put 2, 4, or 6 bulls in with those heifers. And when we look at this closely, I see my circles are off. Okay. So what I'm highlighting here is the pregnancy rates by day 28 of the breeding season. And what this tells us is that in synchronized females, a stocking rate of 1 to 50 is not going to cut it, right? The bulls weren't able to cover that many. Significantly lower pregnancy rates compared to those at a stocking rate of 1 to 16. This is an interesting paper. They've got a pretty good economic analysis that goes with it. And what that economic analysis comes back saying is that that target of one bull per 25 females, and again, this is a mature, active bull who's passed his breeding soundness exam, gives us the best dollar value in terms of what our stocking rate should be. And, you know, when we talk about stocking rate, you may see that 1 to 50 up there and ask some questions about it and say, well, are people doing that? Okay. And one of the things that I'm working on in an effort to get more data from producers about just what's happening there is working with veterinarians, and we've got a program that we call Preg Card. We take a little postcard and we send them out to Sentinel Veterinary Clinics, and every time that vet clinic goes through and preg checks a group of cattle, they fill out a few things. First question is, how many cattle were there? Next question is, how many were open? Pretty simple. But then we go into other things like, how many bulls are out there? Were these cattle repro-vaccinated? Were the cows repro-vaccinated? The bulls? Were their breeding soundness exams done? And so some of the data that we're compiling now, have a look at the stocking rate impact. So we broke them into categories, less than 15 cows per bull, you know, all the way up through greater than 36 cows per bull. Now, with the data that we've got back at this point, again, this is reported data, not a scientifically designed study, but data that our veterinarians are gracious enough to work with us to get, we don't see a difference in these extreme stocking rates when we get higher than 36 cattle per bull. Where we actually see the difference is down here in the very low stocking rates. So again, just kind of food for thought, and there may be some reasons why that's happening. But in general, that average number of one bull per 25 cows, we might be able to go a bit higher than that in terms of our stocking rates. So again, food for thought. So with all that, the bull recommendations, older than 2 years, previous breeding experience, we've got to have good BSCs, high libido, normal stocking rates can be used. And I guess the biggest thing, above all, is watch these groups very, very closely, right? And this, it doesn't matter if this is a estrus synchronization protocol or if this is just turn out the bull and have him run either your cleanup or just regular breeding season. If you're not out there actively watching these bulls, we don't know whether there's some problems with them, whether they have an injury during the breeding season or anything like that. So we've got to watch them very closely. Cow factors. Right, this is pretty easy. You guys have all got your books in front of you. Look at these cows. Are these good candidates for estrus synchronization? For natural service? Right? Take a look at them. Go to page 35 of your book, and Dr. Smith presented all the things that we need to look at for artificial insemination, all the specs that we need to have our cows meet in order to anticipate a good response. And these are the exact same, okay? This is, again, not a big surprise, but we need these cows to be in good body condition. We've got to be sufficient days postpartum and a low incidence of calving difficulty. And so, you know, I kind of messed that one up. I was going to lead in with a question. Are these things important for natural service estrus synchronization? And I already answered it, so absolutely, yeah. And the big thing, the big difference between artificial insemination and natural service is that there was a concerted effort made to make fixed-timed insemination protocols, and some of the specs for those were you absolutely wanted to deal with cows that were cycling and cows that were not cycling. Well, a non-cycling cow just frankly doesn't work with natural service because she's got to show estrus, the bull's got to breed her. So these cow factors are very, very important. All right, synchronization options. Dr. Smith, again, talked a lot about things like this, the estrus cycle. And if I just throw this graph up there, people's eyes start to gloss over and get lost in a hurry. So I'm going to take this down to what exactly we need to know, right? For the bull breeding protocols that I'm going to talk about, this is it. Progesterone is present after a CL is developed, okay? And again, as the lifespan of that CL goes around, progesterone gets high. We have a little couple pulses of prostaglandin down in the corner, right around day 17 or so, and that makes a CL go away, progesterone go down. Those are pretty much the two products I'm going to talk about. And I'm going to refer to this graph again as we go through the next protocols to show you what exactly is going on. And again, I've got that big X. That's what prostaglandin does. Any time during there where we've got a receptive CL, that'll cause a lysis of a CL, and she'll come back into heat. So before we get talking about protocols themselves, what happens if we have no intervention? Okay, so no intervention at all. The percent that are in heat during that first per day, we just take 1 divided by 21. Right? It's like 4.6 or something. So 5% of our cows are in heat every day. When we come into heat, or when we come into how many have been in the first 5 days? 24%. How many in the first 10 days? 48%. Okay, this is for cyclic cows. And again, if that cow got pregnant during this natural cycle, the average cow would have conceived right around day 10. And I'm going to use these for comparisons among these different protocols as we go on. All right, so the first one is a one-shot PG. This is going to be on your protocol handout on the heifer side for heat detection. And basically, what we're trying to do here is eliminate a mature CL that's on the ovary. So basically, anytime we are within this box, right, we have an animal that's going to respond to prostaglandin. when we look at some data about this type of protocol, the first thing we're going to look at is how many of these animals became pregnant within the first 5 days. Okay, we call that a synchronized window. So how many animals became pregnant within that synchronized window? And the animals, the females that were on the one-shot PG protocol, significantly greater portion of them became pregnant within 5 days. Okay, that was the goal. That's what we wanted to have happen. So we can see that that would be on your left side of the screen there. But when we ask a question about overall pregnancy rates, okay, so pregnancy rate at the very end of the breeding season, there was no difference. Okay, so control cattle in the one-shot PG program, it didn't make a difference. Cumulatively, the same amount became pregnant. Another thing to note here, this is kind of a summary of a couple different treatments that were in this study, but there were no differences between a one-shot prostaglandin protocol and a two-shot prostaglandin protocol. Okay? They were the same. All right, moving on to a day four. I call it a day four or day five prostaglandin protocol. And essentially what goes on here is you turn a bull out, and then 4 or 5 days later, you give all the cows in the herd an injection of prostaglandin. Okay? If we remember, look at the left side of your graph here. When we are in this low progesterone environment, when we don't have a mature CL, administration of a prostaglandin will not cause these cows to come back into heat. And it will not abort an existing pregnancy because all the connections aren't there yet. So that's the basis of this protocol. Now, when we do that, when we turn out a bull, we're going to have a good portion that just show natural heat the first few days while that bull's in. And then we're essentially moving all of these cows, because these cows up here on the left side, they'd now be mid-cycle 5 days later. Every one of them, if they are cyclic and if everything works as it should, will respond to prostaglandin. So that says that within that first 10 days roughly, about 100% of the cyclic cattle will show heat. And that's the basis for the protocol. And here's what this does. This is from Rick Funston's group, and they were looking at some heifers, okay? And something you got to note about this study is that these heifers were in an extremely short breeding season, okay? The bulls were out for 5 days, they gave the injection of prostaglandin, and then the bulls were only in for another 20 days after that, okay? So keep that in the back of your mind. Now, the overall pregnancy rate, and I kind of gave that whole preface, overall pregnancy rate was actually a bit lower in these cattle that received the luteolized on day five of the estrous cycle. But if we look at the proportion of cattle that calved within the first 21 days, and again, one of the speakers from earlier today gave us a lot of good reasons why we want to have our animals calve within that first 21 days, the cattle that were on that day five prostaglandin protocol had a significantly greater population of cattle calve within that first 21 days. So that's heifers, one of the studies that's out there. Moving over to cows now. Cows, they've got a little different story. Again, we've got, and this was given on day four after the bulls were turned out. Day four after the bulls were turned out, and the one on the left side, that is a pregnancy rate from day five to day nine, okay, during that synchronized breeding period. And we had 55% of those cattle became pregnant that were given prostaglandin 4 days after the bulls were out, compared with a quarter of those that were on control that didn't receive any injection. Okay, so this is doing something. And when we look at overall pregnancy rate in this particular experiment, or not pregnancy rate, calving rate rather, so how many calves were actually on the ground, that day four PG protocol improved pretty significantly how many cows actually dropped a calf. So, again, another thing to consider. And again, these were all cows had much greater breeding season lengths compared with that 25-day breeding season from the previous study. All right, almost done. I see my man standing there, so it must mean it's time to go. All right, 7-day cedar protocol. This is what we're doing here. 7 days. These are the groups that would normally show estrus, right? And we know that when a cedar's in, it stops these cattle from showing estrus. So we're moving everything essentially back 7 days. So when we come in, we remove our cedar at this point. This is essentially starting everybody over. That means about 80% of those cattle that are actually cyclic will be in heat within 10 days. And so the big question here is, what about the non-cyclic cattle? Because non-cyclic cattle, you know, there's all kinds of research that says these cattle that are not cycling, use a cedar in a protocol, and you're going to initiate cyclicity in some of these cows. So that was really the impetus for this particular study, right? So what's going to happen in non-cyclic cattle? First thing is there were no differences in overall pregnancy rates. But when we went in and ultrasounded these particular cattle, we ultrasounded them twice, day 56 and then sometime after the breeding season, and we were looking at fetal age. So we went in, measured the size of the fetus, and then used that to calculate an estimated date of conception. So what this told us is that those cattle that had a cedar inserted became pregnant 3 days earlier in the breeding season compared with control. So we get the question, well, is 3 days worthwhile? You got to run them through the chute 2 times. You got to buy a cedar. And the politically correct answer is that's up to every individual operation to decide. You know, take a look at the data and see what this means. But we didn't go in and measure progesterone on these cows to get a true idea of cyclicity. But what we did do is look at days postpartum. And we've got days postpartum groups along the bottom side. So less than 40 days, 41 to 50, you can see the rest. And so we've got basically your late calvers on the left side of the screen and your early calvers on the right side of the screen. And there were no differences among our treatments in those late calving cows. Remember, these were the ones that we thought we put a cedar in. We can do some things to improve their cyclicity, get them more of them pregnant, and it didn't work. The days to conception didn't work there. Now, again, it's not a true measure of cyclicity, but it's the best indication we have. We move on to those late calving cows. That's where we really had the big impact. So cows got pregnant earlier in the breeding season if they were actually cycling, or late calving, rather. Possible issues with cedars. Doesn't that look good? I don't care if it is a bull breeding protocol or if it is an AI protocol. This happens a lot more with bull breeding protocols because you don't have your hand in every one of them, right? But this is a cedar that was left in the entire breeding season. We come back, and amazingly enough, she was pregnant. So, again, something to point out with whatever protocols you're using. If you don't see a little cedar tail sticking out, put a glove on and go explore. All right, I'm going to skip over that for the purpose of time. Other options, you know, I highlighted a couple synchronization protocols that could be used. Basically, anything can be. But the big thing is stay away from GnRH, okay? If you've got a wreck coming for some reason, I was talking to John, one of the speakers earlier today, and he said that he broke his leg 6 weeks prior to his AI, okay? If that happens the day before AI, maybe turn out a bull and it might work. If there's really bad weather coming, some reason why you can't get out there and breed those cows, consider some of these bull breeding situations. But the big thing, no GnRH near the time of breeding. Okay, you'll skip right through the heat cycle, and you won't have very good luck at all. So, in summary, we talked about bulls and cows, about things that make them appropriate for synchronization and things that make them not appropriate. Many options exist for the actual protocols themselves. And that slide I skipped over, if you want to go online and actually look at the presentation, that really compares the response of all of the different synchronization protocols to basically a non-synchronized estrus. And the primary driver, the results of all of the estrus synchronization and natural service protocols is to move that portion of calves born earlier in the breeding season, okay, or calving season rather, so to increase that proportion of animals. And again, in all cases, watch these bulls very closely during breeding season. And again, it's not just synchronized estrus, but a day when you're just turning out the bull as well.